the Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Off we go into a new week. Thanks for being with us. Jared Nielsen is the chairman of the board. He is the Iron Man. If anything gets screwed up on the show, it is his fault. Hope you had a great weekend. I had a few things that happened. I'm wondering, why do we still have a Major League Baseball trade deadline? And you may say, well, it's always been that way. Yeah, the DH wasn't over in the National League. And we didn't have a pitch clock. And we can make changes because for the Diamondbacks, it's pretty unfair, I think. And actually, just in baseball in general, you're going to tell a team that is, what, three out, three and a half back? Yeah, you need to sell off all your parts because you can't go on a seven-game win streak. We're getting into that. There is one college that I believe is interested in Kenny Dillingham, even here in July. Doesn't mean he's leaving. It just means that there's going to be people coming after him. That's going to happen. And he can say all day long, I am not going anywhere. This is where I am. And that's fine. That doesn't mean the phone isn't going to ring. And there's one college, I believe, that's already looking at him. We'll get into that with John Wilner. Plus, is Brent Brennan already on the hot seat at the U of A for this coming season? And much more. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. As always and through the years, that's Desert Financial Credit Union. We do appreciate their support. If you are watching this and through the years, you're like, what is the story with the motorcycle rider? Here, I'll get this right. There. What is the story with this picture? What is the story with this? It's not me. I can't do this. When you're 6'8", you don't do that. That is my, that was my best friend outside of the person I married. And yesterday was 21 years to the day that he passed away. And it's my little nod to him that he's always over my shoulder. Best man at my wedding, could have married my wife. Tragically, we lost him to a very rare disease. I was at Carlsbad on the beach, got back and the phone rang and it was his mom. And I don't know where you are in your life, not being preachy, not being heavy. It's just on this Monday. Don't take those moments for granted. That's all I'm going to tell you. Now, on to the world of fun and games, as I like to say. I don't know how the Diamondbacks can trade Gino Suarez right now. I really don't. I think there's a few things here. And I'm going to talk to Jody Jackson about it. Jody will be with us momentarily. And then we will have John Wilner, Wilner Hotline, as we do every Monday. The Gino Suarez deal is this. He's going to be a free agent. I get it. He can bring back a King's Hall. Sure. Is his defense as good as it once was? That's why God created the designated hitter. Is he a moving force with inside the locker room? I'm going to talk to Jody about this. I want a little bit more from Jody because she's there every single day, or pretty much every single day, on the impact of Gino Suarez within the locker room. My understanding is he's a deep man of faith, and that is throughout the Diamondbacks locker room, and he's the leader of that. Spurge has been working on that piece. So we're going to talk with Jody. Zach Gallen's throwing tonight. This is obviously a huge start for him. He's not been good this season. I myself, if I had to part with Zach Gallen, I would be okay with that because he's going to be a free agent. I'd have a tougher time giving up Merrill Kelly right now because they are still in it. And again, I'll go back to the point of why do we still have a Major League Baseball trade deadline? It is antiquated. It is outdated. We've been able to fix and make moves throughout Major League Baseball through the years. No designated hitter in the National League. Pitchers got a hit. No, we're going to get rid of that. Pitch clock, we're going to get that in the game. So why do we have to have this antiquated trade deadline here in late July? We're telling the rest of you, you can't make up five games, six games, eight games. Why do we have that? Because it makes no sense here in Arizona that we're up against the wall because of some old rule. It makes no sense. Suarez is just fun. Suarez is fun. I sat here in my office yesterday and I was working on some things and he's now become that guy. Corbin Carroll is that guy. When Corbin Carroll bats, I move my office and my chair right over here and I watch. When Suarez comes up, I go right over here and watch. My wife, my better half, much better half, will poke her head in, you know, how's the game going? How's Suarez doing? So it's fun. He has more home runs than Ohtani. Like, what? He has more home run. Like Aaron Judge, like, the sky's right here in Phoenix. Can he get after Gonzo's record of the team of 57? I don't really care as much about that as I do. This team's got to get into the wild card. And they're sitting here at 50 and 50, which means they got to go about 37. Yeah, probably. What is there? There's 62 games left. So if they go, we got to get to 88, 87, 88 wins, I think. I know 84 was a number they got in on, somewhere in the high 80s. There, I'll leave it at that. And that's going to be tough to do. But I just can't imagine having to part with a team. I can imagine parting with Zach Gallen, and some will be like, there's no way. Well, you have to get something in that bullpen because the bullpen is still gasoline and matches coming out. What else? Watching Scottie Scheffler, here's where it's going to go in our industry. Here's where it's going to go. I'm guaranteeing you this. It's going to turn into the, well, he's not Tiger. He doesn't have the charisma of Tiger. Brad, did you hear him last week when he said, what's the point? What's the point? What's the point? I love that when he said, what's the point? If you didn't see Scottie for unplugged 5 minutes, it was last Wednesday. Google it. Just it's Scottie Scheffler, like, well, this isn't that. What's the point of this in the grand scheme of things in life? He talked about two Chipotles that he goes to in Dallas where they don't recognize him. It's all he can do is go to a Chipotle where nobody knows who that is. That's a pretty good endorsement for Chipotle. And to see him just go blow away the competition, those of us that have been fortunate enough to see, I saw the back end of Nicklaus and Miller, very, very back end when I was a young boy. Didn't really see and appreciate Arnold Palmer. Saw all of Tiger, every last bit of Tiger. Saw every last bit of Phil. Now I've seen every last bit of Jordan Spieth. And the charisma, the wearing the red on Sunday, the way that it was marketed. The way that he was propped up. Like Scotty yesterday gave some interviews after the round was over that were quite frankly pretty vanilla, pretty boring. But when I see him go down the path of what's the point, I don't care about the interview. You know, it's weird in this in our society how much perception, you know, he shows up or she shows up on this place or that place, or they stand for this, and that means that they're the greatest thing ever. Well, no, that's not him. It's not him. He doesn't seek it out. And I do think there's a part of our country that sports fans that like the humbleness. It's just we don't scream and yell as louder as others. The WNBA All-Star weekend, the girls wearing shirts, you're going to take a stand and you're going to face backlash. People don't want to hear about how you don't believe you're making as much money as you should. When you're playing a game, very poor idea. Very poor idea. How else are they going to get the word out? By doing things on a corporate level, by meeting in boardrooms, not going out there and pissing off the fans that show up to watch them play that have to put down their money. This was very ill thought out, not smart on the girls' part. Are the WNBA players underpaid? Sure. Do the ratings show something? I haven't seen the ratings for the All-Star game. Doesn't really matter. There's quality of basketball. Yeah, I've said for years, I was the original play-by-play voice of the Mercury. They should have been flying private. I have people within the WNBA that hate me for taking that stance. They don't like that stance at all. But I do believe that what is fair. And this idea that you're going to go take a public stand at the All-Star game by wearing shirts. Bad idea. I was reading the Washington Post yesterday. One of the players played in full makeup. Like, yeah, I have to show up and make an appearance, and it doesn't really count. All-Star games, the best of the All-Star games is the Major League Baseball All-Star game, and it's not even close. If anybody says the Pro Bowl is the best of the All-Star games, I'm probably the wrong show for you to watch. Just, I can't handle waste of times. Like, I cannot handle. If you're one of those that is so excited about the start of preseason NFL football, I would respond with go on a date. Bring her flowers. Bring him flowers. Really? You're going to go watch guys that are going to get cut just to say you're in the same building as Patrick Mahomes here in a few weeks, which is fine. It's fine. Yeah, the Chiefs are going to be here. He's not going to play. Travis Kelce not going to play. You think Taylor's going to fly in to watch who cares preseason football? Anyways. And then Trump going on social media about the Washington Redskins name and the Cleveland Indians name and how he wants them brought back. I gotta believe there's bigger problems in our country. In fact, I'm sure there are. In what point, in what universe is the nickname of a team something that we should even be discussing or debating? In what universe? And if you're going to try to rally to your base, great, knock yourself out. It's not a political statement on my part. It's just like we have a lot more important things than trying to get the word out to the fans of Cleveland and Washington that this is what we want, or that I can hold up the sale of Washington, the Commanders going to a new group or getting a new stadium built. You know, we're spending so much time on things that really don't matter. And stuff like this really doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things. What matters is winning games because the All-Star break is now done. The trade deadline is in front of us. Jody Jackson is going to join me next. We're also going to talk about the opening of Cardinals training camp. She will be out there as well. And then John Wilner, destination for Kenny Dillingham down the road, coach on the hot seat right here in Arizona. All that is straight ahead. Thanks for being with us. Well, looky here. It's been a few weeks. Actually, I think it's been a month since Jody and I chopped it up. Jody Jackson with us, brought to you by Shamrock Farms. We appreciate their support from Rock and Refuel.
You've been traveling, I think, a lot. So,
You've been
you've been
traveling a
out
lot.
on the circuit.
You've been traveling too, have you not?
That's true.
Okay.
Yes,
So
it's been busy.
let me get into this with Gino. You have been in the dugout holding a microphone, covering the Diamondbacks for how many years now, Jay?
I mean, not at full time, like many games since 2012, but since 2000, since I got here, I was luckily here for the World Series. I came in 2000 and they won it in 01, and I got to interview guys after winning the World Series. I mean, what's better than that, right?
Where is Gino's current run in terms of coolness factor?
It's pretty cool. Well, he's just crushing baseballs. The only thing I can really compare it to, and Mark Grace brought this up the other day, is really Gonzo at 57, because Gonzo had 40 home runs at the 100 game mark, and Gino has 35. And we really haven't seen anything like that, as far as, and we've seen some sluggers come through, but to have this kind of a season, I don't know if he'll get there. We all know that record is 57 for the franchise, and we kind of don't even want to get ahead of ourselves, I feel like, with that. But he certainly could, the way that he is doing it. I mean, he hits like two in a game once a week lately. So, and then he might, sprinkle in another homer in another game. So it has been wild to watch, and couldn't happen to a better guy. He's a guy that is always. I was kind of laughing last night. I was thinking about, have we ever seen Gino kind of mad or even like annoyed? And
Opening
no.
day, he had an error. Opening day this year, he had an error, and he was banging his glove. Do you remember
Yeah, I mean, mad at himself.
that?
Yeah, but and not that you see players, mad at each other or anything like that. But you're just like, I can't even picture him at home. Like, he's got two gorgeous little girls, and like, does he, when they don't pick up their toys, does he even? I don't know. Like, he's just such a happy guy. Like, I guess Gonzo was the same way in a lot of ways, and it's kind of funny to. It's kind of cool to see guys that are are leaders in their own way and are just guys that are having fun out there on the baseball field doing what they're doing.
I was going to ask you what kind of guy he is for the fans to just take us down that path. You gave a pretty good answer there. Are there other things you talk to him about? Like, does he have interests in other things, or is it just strictly baseball when you visit with him?
You know, that's a great question. That's why I was thinking about it, is like, what else do I know? He does eat, breathe, sleep baseball like a lot of these guys. I mean, I don't think there's a lot of hobbies like it right now during the season, but he is such a family guy, and I know that probably doesn't come as a surprise. His wife, his two kids, he talked about his parents being able to go to the All-Star game, and it was cool when I got to see all the pictures on the red carpet in Atlanta. His sister was there, his parents, and that meant a lot because when he went back in 2018, you know, his parents didn't get to go, and so he had that chance to bring them again. And I think that's something, though, for me, I was like, I want to know more about him, so I'm going to dig into a few of those things in the coming weeks.
Jordan Spurgeon told me that he has a strong faith. Jordan's working on a
Yes.
faith piece within the team, and that he's in the middle of that, which is cool. I'm just sitting here with a conundrum that we're all facing. How did the Diamondbacks possibly trade this guy? And what is going on? Like, I know about deadlines. I hate the trade deadline. I think it's antiquated. I think it's outdated. I think they should get rid of it, because what you're telling somebody in the middle of July is you can't make a run, or late July, you can't make a run. Sounds great in the 70s, not great in 2025. That said, how do you trade him, Jody?
It's excruciating to think about it, right? Because the fans love him. We all love him. He's a great player. But you're right, Brad, because you're sitting here, and let's see, the deadline is coming up. So let's say you've got 50 games left, right? I don't know the exact amount, but it's roughly about 50, which is a little less than a third of the season. So we all know how many things can happen in a third of a season, good or bad. And you know, for the Diamondbacks, hopefully it's good. You feel like this team is kind of getting this moniker of like a second half team, which is kind of crazy to think about because so many things you can't control. But we do get the sense from them that they've been in this spot before. When you go on a World Series run, when you have 84 wins and no one expects you to, I guess what that means is when your back is a little bit against the wall, do you come out fighting? And with this team, the answer is yes. So yeah, I agree with you there. So, with the trade deadline, how do you decide that? Because 50 wins is nothing to just spit on and say this is
Sure.
nothing. It means nothing. You know, when you look at 50 and 50 after 100 games, you can say, well, it's disappointing. But you know, it's taken a lot to get those 50, and it's a very talented team. Yes, they have some flaws. And we know that they're in the pitching category for the most part. Those are the areas you'd love to see them add to. And if they add to them, what does this team look like if they're able to add? So, I mean, is it an add and subtract? I feel like Mike Hazen does that really well, but he really hasn't had pieces like this, a piece like Gino Suarez, you know, even Merrill Kelly to some extent. He's having a really good season. I think Zach Gallen is a guy that people have come to know as a great pitcher over the years, but he's been very inconsistent, even right up to his last start before the break was not a good one. So you're right. This is a very tough, as far as Gino, I mean, the things I've heard from Mike Hazen and even Amyl Sadé are that they feel very strongly, and they don't necessarily have to trade their pieces. If they, I mean, and they, you know, I should give context on that, but I will say this, because I don't have quotes from them specifically on Gino. They haven't talked about specifically on Gino. They've talked about Mike Hazen talked about getting calls that they're people coming in calling or say are acting like we're quote dead in the water. And he said he didn't share his reaction to that. So I know he doesn't feel the club is dead in the water, but I do know this, and I know you know this. When you make trades, especially deadline trades, you don't know if you know if you don't feel really sure about what you're getting, you don't, you know, you might not be getting that haul that you think you're getting that everyone says you're supposed to get. So if you're not feeling like you're getting that, I mean, there's a lot of other ways to gain talent. Now, major league ready talent, probably in the trade, yes, but they have also drafted really well. And so, you know, that's a longer haul. That's 3 to 5 years when you draft people, but There are other ways to get players. They're not going to let the noise affect them. They know what they're doing. They've been in this business a long time. I mean, the business of acquiring players is very important, but it has to be the right deal.
Okay. You had a lot there. Jody Jackson with us for a few minutes. Huge start tonight for Zach Gallen, obviously, because you go out there and you don't pitch well again, which has been the moniker for him this season. I'm looking in Ken Kendrick's shoes. I'm looking from the ownership down. Jody, is there a scenario where this is my way of seeing it? You keep Gino, you sign him to an extension in the next week, and it shoots an enormous shot of adrenaline into the franchise. It shoots an enormous amount of adrenaline into the fan base because the fan base, they're not going to understand if Geno's traded. It doesn't matter how you try to sparse it. We have to
Right.
trade him because we're out of the, it doesn't matter. I love him. And then there's this whole chemistry of this team. This is something you can speak to more than anybody else. You and Todd, because you're the two that are in there every single day. You pull Geno Suarez out of here, you're pulling the plug on a few players, aren't you? A few players are going to be like, I'm deflated. I don't
Yeah.
want to be here,
Yeah,
right?
he's a big piece. He's a big, and it's when you talked earlier about his faith. I mean, a lot of guys subscribe to that as well, and Gino's the leads in that way as well, and they have learned a lot from him. A lot of the young players have learned a lot about life from Gino Suarez, and so I agree with you. And I may be it, this might be an unpopular take, but yeah, if they're even remotely in it, I kind of feel like they don't trade Gino. I really do. And as far as the extension, though, right here and now, I don't know about that. It's such a delicate area, right? This is why
Because of
some
his
teams.
age, right? He's older. You've got him at the best that he could ever be.
Well, yeah, I mean, because a couple of months ago, as I was watching him, even I was wondering, if I'm being perfectly honest, there were some moments I thought on defense, I'm thinking, okay, is he getting slower? Is he a step off? And you know what? He's been spectacular lately. So I just think everybody has their ups and downs. But as far as the slugger goes, he is right up there with, I mean, you just have to look at the numbers, the Aaron Judge, the Cal Raleigh, all these guys. He's
Ronnie.
got The team is insane when you think about Gino having more homers than Shohei, Perdomo having more RBIs than a lot of these guys in the league. It's quite an offense, and to break any piece of it up would be very tough. But I will, okay, and then I'll play devil's advocate. If he does leave, they do have a very strong core. I just mentioned Perdomo. I mentioned Cor. I can tell you about Corbin Carroll. I can, Alec Thomas is having a pretty good year. You've got guys but none of them have possessed the qualities of Gino. So that will be the narrative, though, if he does go, and if that makes sense in a few days here. But right now the team's hot, so we'll see with Houston. Houston presents a big challenge.
Make Gino a DH, speed of the DH, move him over to first base, have him play some third, but not much. That stage of his career, retire as a Diamondback. That's me. That's why I'm sitting
Well,
here
it's
in the
interesting
front
because
office.
Marte, I think there's a thought with Marte as he gets older, not right now. He's playing a good second base right now, but like what does that look like for him down the line? Is he a DH more or is he a first baseman? And those are all things to be decided down the line, because Marte, I think, he's still young enough where he can play second base for a few more years.
Okay, one last question on the Diamondbacks. Do you believe that they will make a trade of some sort by the deadline?
I believe that they will make trades to improve their pitching because they have to, Brad. They have to for next year. Corbin Burns, we talked to him on Sunday, and he's not coming back till, and everything's going fine. His rehab is fine. But these guys that have undergone Tommy John or internal brace, they're looking at coming back sometime in the summer. And that's never easy to project. And right now, you need bullpen help to get through the next couple months. Right now, when you're up 10-1, that is fantastic. And you have a long man doing, coming out, giving you 3 innings. One run games, 1 to 3 run leads have been very hard for this team to keep. And they are very banged up still in the bullpen. They're going to get a couple guys back at the end of July, but we're not there yet. So I think they will need help for pitching in all areas.
All right, you're going to go over to Cardinals camp. They open on Thursday, right? You're going to be out there.
Yes. Yes.
Is it as simple as it appears to me that as Kyler goes, so will this season, and this will be Kyler's last season in Arizona, in all likelihood, if it doesn't go well?
Well, that is what everyone seems to be saying, and I do see the rationale behind that. Boy, this team's put a lot of investment into him, time, energy, and of course the money spent. And I think you're right. It is. It is out how Kyler Murray goes, and we've seen him do some pretty special things, but we know he needs Marvin Harrison Jr., who looks totally different this year. He's all pumped up, jacked up. Trey McBride. So those two guys are his primary targets. What is around him? We know about the offense. Very solid pieces around him. Offensive line, I think the only really question is, is Jonah Williams back to full health? He should be. Isaiah Adams at right guard, can he do that job? The O-line is looking, I think, pretty stable. If those guys stay healthy, that's always the caveat there. And then the defense, I mean, the storyline each year, Brad, seems to be these additions on defense. Josh Sweat, Calais Campbell, Dalvin Tomlinson, these guys are all are going to be a great help to the D-line. But they have not had guys stay healthy. So, I mean, for me, that they have a ton of guys right now coming out of camp that are really healthy on that D line. And I think that's going to make a huge difference because they have been banged up in that area the last couple of years.
All right, you sound optimistic. I'm optimistic. I
Yeah,
mean,
you're a little down.
nah, I mean it's the Cardinals. That's how I look at it. Here's the thing. They're in a tough division. They're in a tough conference. If you just look at the numbers of teams that are better than them right now on paper, it feels like this team always gets banged up because that's the story of the NFL. Every team gets banged up. It's just who makes it through the war of attrition in better shape. The whole caveat here is I don't have faith in Kyler over a long season to be on the field because he's going to get hit at some point, as all quarterbacks do. And he has yet to show that from every week, he looks great. Marvin Harrison Jr. can look great. It looks all great, the skill position players. But I've seen this movie so many times that I have to at least have a little bit of skepticism, a little bit of like, okay, what's this look like? And where are they going to go if this doesn't work out? If it works out, I think they're going to be a great football team. I think they could be the best team in the NFC West. I don't know if they're the best team in all of football, but it really comes down to, is this guy ever going to be consistent for an entire season? That's it.
Yeah, and I've made myself clear the last few years on what really needs to improve. The games that they are performing at a pretty high level and have a chance to win, how is he going to perform in the fourth quarter? Decision making, not turning over the ball. I mean, those are huge things for Kyler Murray. And I know that sounds very black and white, but in the context of the game,
Gotta
what does
be.
that look like? And as well as I do, Brad, when this team relies on the run, I know you want to rely on the franchise quarterback and you want to pile up numbers and you want him to shine. But this team offensively is at its best when they're running the ball. And frankly, I think that's what they're going to have to do again. I don't think it can be all on Kyler. When Kyler's trying to do everything by himself, it doesn't seem to work. It takes a couple. And is he special enough to make some of that happen? Yeah, we've seen that in flashes and in spurts. But that Rams defense, I got to watch them in the playoff game against the Vikings. They're special. That's going to be a difficult challenge as far as the rest of the NFC West. I mean, I think they can absolutely compete with these other teams. The Rams, I think, especially that defense and the challenges they present for all the offenses in the league, but especially for Kyler, I think that's a hump that they have to get over.
All right. Kyler, when I see a national broadcast, which most every time the Cardinals get on, it's, once or twice a year, a national broadcast. They'll show the Hail Mary throw, and I'm like, yeah, all the Bill player had to do is knock it down. So let's not just put the whole resume on one play. It was fun to watch in the moment, but if that's what you have to do is go back and just find one or two plays rather than,
Raiders game, remember that craziness,
yeah,
right? I mean,
just win games. Just, I don't need highlights. I don't need, just go manage. People like game manager, that's a bad term. No, it's not. If you're able to get into the postseason, if you're able to do some things, like usually this is year three for Gannon, right? And
yep.
usually by year three, we are in the conversation of, will this coach make it? I think this coach is going to make it, but he's tied to this quarterback. So I rest my case. I just am in a wait and see moment. So there you go.
Yeah, no, we all are. And I think we're all hoping that it all comes together this year. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see because Kyler Murray, we all know now. I mean, he's had plenty of time in this league to be better,
Yes, no
being
excuses.
more consistent and making better decisions.
Yeah, put a first round pick alongside. I mean, come on. All right, there's Jody Jackson. Jody Jackson knows all, tells all here on the local scene. Brought to you by Shamrock Farms. We appreciate Jody, and we're back with more after this timeout. John Wilner, as always, every Monday with us. Wilner Hotline, you can read it on the site. Of course, a nationally syndicated columnist with all sorts of content that you can check out that he produces each and every week. Okay, partner, here's the deal. We are now just over a month away from the first games. It's coming up pretty quick, which we like. Big 12, let's be Big 12 focused. Coach that you look at that say he definitely has to win or he is gone this year. Who is that one guy that's definitely gone if he doesn't win?
I mean, I think Brett Brennan is in big trouble if they are below 500. He dug himself a pretty sizable hole last year in Tucson, and I think that there's a lot of pressure on him. Now, if they get to 5-7, and that includes a win over ASU and a couple of close losses, maybe they bring him back. But I think Brennan's under a lot of heat, maybe more than anybody in the conference. Cincinnati's got a potential coaching change coming. I don't know. Oklahoma State for sure. Mike Gundy, they had a terrible year last year, and
But he's viewed back there, John, as he's a god. You can't touch
well,
him, right? It's kind of
I don't know. I mean, winless in
8-5.
conference play, you can lose that status quickly when you go 0-9 in conference play like they did. I think that there's some concerns that Gundy hasn't adopted to the modern era with the NIL and the revenue sharing and with the way you have to deal with the athletes and manage a roster. I think there's some concern in Stillwater that he hasn't done that, and there's a lot of pressure on him to orchestrate a turnaround here.
Okay, hearing you speak, I am thinking that you have some people on the inside saying Brent Brennan better darn well win. You're
No, not necessarily. I just think, well,
oh.
they it was such a disappointment last year. Anytime the athletic director has to make a public statement supporting the coach, that coach is on the hot seat. I mean, those two things go hand in hand. And Desiree Reed-Francois late November, early December, came out and said, Brennan is our coach. He's coming back next year. That is a red alert in my book. And especially in a case where the athletic director and the university president were not the tandem that hired the coach,
Sure.
right? Brennan lost the AD who hired him and that president who hired him are gone. And so that adds, I think, to the pressure and the slippery slope that he's on. Now, he's made a lot of good moves in the offseason, right? Good coordinator changes, retained key players, and you figure that on the injury front, there'll be a little bit of a reversion to the mean, especially on defense. I think the culture's much better than it was, but they still got to win. I think they have got to get to 6-6.
Yeah, but it's back to the old days where ASU and U of A were both not relevant. And everybody, oh, it's the teacup. It's the biggest thing ever. No, it's not. It's opposite Alabama, Auburn. It's opposite Michigan, Ohio State. It's not the biggest thing. The only question is which coach is going to get fired? So coming into this teacup, sitting here in July, do you believe he'd be coaching for his job in that game? You said earlier, if he has a win over ASU, could that game already be won that he's got to win in order to keep the gig?
I think that is more likely than not, yeah, that he's going to have to beat ASU, just the way things are likely to play out. But it's hard to know because we see those two schools flip-flop, right? A year ago, we're talking about Arizona as a Big 12 favorite and ASU as being picked last. And then the next thing we know, ASU's in the playoff and Arizona is struggling and Brennan needs a public show of support from his AD. It can change quickly. I don't expect a massive role reversal this coming season, but you never know. It's also interesting that It's so rare that both Arizona schools are good at the same time, right? I mean, you can count, I think, on one hand the number of seasons this century where they both have had 9+ wins. It just doesn't happen. And I don't know necessarily that it's tied to the recruiting talent within the state and who's doing better. I think there's much more to it, but it has been, it's very rare. I want to say 2014 might have been the last time Todd Graham, Rich Rod, Arizona won the South. ASU was really good. Coming and they were coming off a division title. That was the last time they were both really good at the same time, I think. It's been a decade.
Okay. Kenny Dillingham, here is my view. A great season for them is winning 8 games. Last year was magical. Okay. I know they have 2 first-round picks in all likelihood in the quarterback and the wide receiver. I get it. I get it. But they needed some breaks even last year. If you're really to put down in some of those games, luck, skill, what bounce of a ball, this, that, poor play calling by UCF. I think Kenny is going to be one of those top five names that other schools are going to go after if they have another big season. I just believe that Kenny's going to be sitting out there in a really good spot. And I think that USC is going to be one of those schools that will pursue him. I'm laying down the gauntlet here in July to watch out for USC because Lincoln Riley's run is coming to an end. Yeah, like you said with U of A, different front office now over USC. USC people are crazy when it comes to their team. They had a bad year. They'll want to talk about OJ and Charlie White and Pat Hayden and the glory years and Coach Robinson and Coach McKay. Those days are gone. They're not walking through the door. So Kenny Dillingham, I think if you're going to put together a list of hot candidates, would have to be at the top of the list. If he has another good season. Good season is 8 wins. Great season is 8 wins, I believe, this year. Because the Big 12's better, John. The Big 12
It is.
this year.
And they have got pressure on them that has not existed before. And it can change the dynamics internally. I would agree with you. I think if they get to 8-4, it won't be viewed publicly as a great season
No, no.
because of where the expectations are. But I think, ASU, they should be very happy. 8-4. Anytime ASU wins 8, I think that that's cause, for contentment in Tempe, at
Oh,
least internally.
no. I
No,
cut you off
internally.
there.
The fans, sure.
No, not even internally. They
Okay.
could win one game. And as long as it's against the U of A, it's a great season.
Okay.
Everything is great, Brad. Why are you picking on us? It's a great year. We beat the Wildcats, who stink.
I could see that. Yes, for sure. In terms of Dillingham, though,
Yeah? You're not
I
sold,
think
are
that
you?
I don't think, put it this way, if USC came calling, I don't think he'd take the job. I think he wants to be at ASU. He's that rare case of, grew up there, went to school there, bleeds the school colors. His contract is set up. He wanted longevity and stability in his contract. They gave it to him with that rollover clause. I think he'd say thanks, but no thanks to USC. And look, here's the key question. You could make a good case that getting into the CFP is easier at ASU than it is at USC.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah.
You.
The other piece is the Lincoln Riley's buyout is, I believe, around $80 million if he gets fired after the season. And that school has got huge money trouble. They got a $200 million shortfall. So I'm not sure they're going to be in position to make a change, even if they're 5-7. It's so much money.
Okay, look around the country. What are some jobs that, and it could be outside the Big 12? Where are some places that you believe there could be?
Well, there could be a ton of turnover in the SEC. Dillingham coached at Florida State, right?
Auburn too.
Auburn too, yeah. So both of those schools have coaches on the hot seat. The SEC is loaded with hot seats. There's probably more hot seats than there are cold seats. I mean, Alabama, LSU, Florida, Auburn, Kentucky. I mean, it is an impressive Oklahoma, Right? I mean, there could be a load of big time spots open, and I am not sure that Dillingham would answer the call from any of them. I'm really not. Not after just three seasons at his alma mater. Now, if that scenario were to play out after he's been there at ASU for seven seasons or nine seasons, maybe. I don't think he's going to leave. I really don't.
Wow. You are throwing down the gauntlet right now. You don't.
I'm kind of gauntleting it. Yes,
wow.
I kind of am.
I'm looking at the decimal point, not the gauntlet. I'm looking at the decimal point. I'm looking at facilities. I'm looking at resources. I'm looking at lack of excuse. I'm looking at school president. I'm looking at no nonsense behind the scenes. There's still some of that going on, John.
There is. But I think he's got what he wants there for himself and his family. He's got stability. And again, the CFP is the biggest deal. And if, you know, whether it stays at 12 or goes to 16, you know, which is easier? Like, I don't know for sure the Big 12 will have two bids every year. But to me, I look at it like, would it be easier for Dillingham to finish in the top two in the Big 12 on a regular basis or going to USC and finishing in the top four in the Big 10? I think you could make the case that the ASU in the Big 12 is a better deal than USC in the Big 10.
John Wilner with us for a couple of minutes. All right, getting back on the rails on my end. Mountain West Conference, Pac-12, all the movement of schools. What does this do to college football on the West Coast? Does it improve it? Does it make it? Are the TV contracts going to come through from an exposure standpoint? What do you make out of all the movement that's gone on here in the offseason? Because we haven't really dove into it.
Yeah, and that movement goes all the way down to the Big Sky. I mean, everybody is affected, and this all began with Texas and Oklahoma going to the SEC in 2021. It's the same realignment wave just rippling through the different levels of major college football and basketball, and we're not done. It's hard to know exactly. The Pac-12 and Mountain West both are still doing TV deals, and they still are involved in two lawsuits that could have a big impact on what happens next. Until the Mountain West announces they've got a TV deal, that situation is unstable. Until the Pac-12 finishes its TV deal and decides it's done expanding, that situation is unstable. It's a little hard to tell right now, but generally speaking, I'm not sure that any of this is good. You know, for the overall benefit, the holistic view of college sports on the West Coast, I'm not sure any of it is good, but it's the world that these schools live in, the constant fight to improve your station in life, to get to the next highest conference. Now, the exception to that's UNLV, which turned down an offer from the Pac-12 last fall to stay in the Mountain West and kind of be the, you know, big fish, little pond deal. I'm not sure that's going to work for the Rebels, but all in all, I think that the whole wave that began with USC and UCLA leaving for the Big Ten, I don't think is good for college sports. I think college sports is best when everything is regionalized. It's best for the athletes. It's best for the rivalries. It's best for the fans.
Wow. That is a good column right there. That is strong. A good way to end the segment, John. Nicely done.
Thanks for setting me up.
Yeah, that's how, you know what, I lob it up here like this. That's John Wilner, Wilner Hotline, and we're back with more after this timeout.